What's up?
This is Ryan.
And I'm Zach.
And we are together, functionally literate.
We are. What are we doing today, Ryan?
Well, we've done a lot today. The audience. So we, the audience, today we're covering Japanese mythology.
We're going to cover Japanese.
Zach and I and our sound guy, Chris, we've been here all day. We've recorded a lot today.
We have. It's been a busy day.
We recorded Buddhism. Mm-hmm. And then we recorded Chinese mythology.
For the second time. This will be the second time we do Japanese mythology.
We're nervous. We may have to do it a third time.
We may. We'll see how the sound comes out.
Indeed.
In which case, you won't hear any of this. You'll just hear us go, ugh, third time.
Right. Have you noticed the whole time we've been recording, Kara has not contacted me?
I hadn't noticed until you pointed it out.
Would you like to know why?
I would.
I got her a new video game. Star Wars Jedi Survivor.
Oh, I heard that was good.
Yeah, real good. Very glitchy, unfortunately. Yeah. But, you know, it just came out. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
You know, when we're bored with it, it'll be perfect.
Those AAA titles always. They love to shortchange you a game.
More like triple C titles.
Right.
Like, come on. Like, it's fun, but it's not fun if I've got to start over at my last save point whenever, like, it glitches in some weird way.
Yeah. And I clip through a wall again.
Yeah. Anyways, this is probably going to be the final recording session for a bit.
You know? Yeah. I'm going to be taking a break here. I'm having a baby.
That's right.
The end of this month.
Good
job. This month is May. This will not be when you're hearing this. It's just when we're recording. So I'm going to be taking a little sabbatical, not from reading. I will continue reading. I will just not be recording.
No, he'll be busy.
But don't worry. I'm going to take a break. I'm not going to read any of the mythology stuff until we come back. That's a lie. I am going to read pretty much all of it, but I will reread it.
There you go.
When we come back.
There you go. There you go. Yeah, and so I'm going to be releasing some stuff after this comes out. I'm going to be releasing some stuff with other people. Not sure who it's going to be yet, but today we are going to be discussing Japanese mythology.
Yes. My source will be the Kosumo Classics publication of The Holy Kojiki, including the Yengeshiki.
My source will be a book that I don't have because we recorded this a long time ago and someone else has checked that book out.
Did you go to the library to check?
I did.
Oh, no.
Jeez. Yeah.
Those gosh darn public libraries, I tell you.
I mean, I love the library.
How dare everyone else also use them?
Nah, it's all right. I have a bit to talk about. I don't have a story, but I do have a little bit of factoids for everyone. So Japanese mythology is interesting because it's drawing from a few different things. So the original mythology, the native mythology of Japan, is Shintoism.
Yeah.
That's the unique one. They are also influenced by Confucianism, Taoism, those are from China, and then also from Buddhism, which is from India, migrated to China and other places, and then from China migrated to Japan.
Right.
So that's also a really big influence. So early on, Japan, they viewed themselves basically as the world. Like,
yeah.
You know, mythologically speaking, they viewed the world as all of the islands composing Japan.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't view themselves as Japanese people because they viewed themselves as like the people from their respective islands.
Right.
There was Hokkaido, or there is rather, Hokkaido, Honshu, Shikoku, Kyushu, and the archipelago, which is about 7,000 smaller islands east of the four islands I just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
All of that together, that composes modern Japan as we know today.
Yeah. It's not surprising that they would have conceptualized that as everything because they're so far away from everything else that for some, you know, for a people that can't, and I'm not going to say they're not seafaring because obviously people got to the island somehow, but they, don't have the technology to regularly, consistently travel from mainland Asia back to the island. It is functionally all that does exist. Like, that's it. That is practically speaking the entire world.
If you don't have, like, advanced boats or anything.
Right. Well, I mean, think of it like if you didn't own a car or a horse or knew how to ride one, your world is functionally however bit, like, far you can travel in one day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how far can you get in 12 hours before you got to turn around and go back home?
And how often do you even want to do that?
I try to never, if I can.
Yeah.
I really like being at home.
You know, cars are nice and all, but, oh yeah, side note, we're recording in the Midwest space, so.
There may be a little bit of background noise, but that's all right. There's some very nice people doing a photo shoot.
It's fine.
They've been very courteous.
You hear some sound. Sorry about you.
It shouldn't be too imposing, I don't think.
Anyways, speaking of VidWest, thank you to VidWest for letting us use your space.
Yeah, thanks, VidWest.
Thank you to Digistory Productions for providing us some of the equipment that we're using. We got the rest of the equipment from VidWest. Thank you to Chris from Digistory Productions for being our sound guy and, you know, setting everything up for us and doing during the recording phase, supervising things.
Yeah.
And thank you to Jake Weller for our music.
Awesome.
Our music is awesome. It's so we good. Love it. If you
I'll
love
say every
it,
episode. So good.
Yeah. If you love it, be sure to listen to Wasting Time. That is Jake's album. It's on Spotify, and I'm sure it's available in other places as well.
Probably. And thank you to Ryan's possessed laptop.
Yeah.
For doing all this editing work.
Yeah, it's on its last limbs, guys.
As Ryan tells it to do it, obviously. But the laptop's doing this.
So let's get into it.
Let's do it. The
holy Kojiki.
Yeah, so it was really tough to pick a story because really what I had come up with was telling one really long story.
That
works. It was comprised of multiple shorter stories.
Sure.
And it starts with Izanami and Izanagi.
Izanami and Izanagi.
Also known as his male augustness and her female augustness.
Augustness.
Or his august maleness, if you prefer.
Interesting.
They are sibling spouses.
Sure.
We've run into this trope before. We will continue to run into that trope.
Listen, there's not a lot of gods and incest doesn't matter, except in Hinduism.
That's right.
Matters it there. Does.
There was a fun moment when they decided they were going to have kids where they had to do this sort of weird ritual where they dance around a pole and then Izanagi, her august femaleness, made the mistake of speaking first.
Oh, shit.
How dare she?
How dare.
And because of that, all of the children that were born of the union were terrible, awful things.
I remember this story.
So the immortals were like, no, do it again. And then... bro, you got to speak first. So they do it again. They do. And they birth the islands that are Japan and many other minor deities.
Just, we're going to just insert that misogyny right at the beginning.
We're just going to make sure.
Listen, the man speaks first.
The male essence has initiative here. Which, I mean, you could read as the male, obligation to initiate romance in Japanese society. So they have some kids. But it gets interesting when she gives birth to the fire god.
Tell me about this fire god.
So birthing all the other gods, no issue. But this one is literal fire.
Yeah, I imagine that would
so that passing through a birth canal, even a divine august one.
I mean, people don't tend to like fire even when they're gods.
Yeah. And so it was a painful delivery. Izanagi was told, don't come in while she's birthing.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, all right, cool, I won't. But he hears this screaming. He's like, oh, I have to go check it. He goes to check it out. She's like become a dragon at this point, is burning the fire. It's a nightmare scenario for him. And he's freaking out. Now she's freaking out because he came in, was supposed to. And ultimately, in birthing this child, she dies.
He saw the monster within, and he shouldn't have.
That's right. Now, in his anger, he decides to murder this god of fire. Important caveat here, it's an adult god at this point. That's not how gods work, all right? It's not a little helpless baby.
So, before you continue, in my version, she did not die. That I read, she was so offended that he did not do as she asked, because she needed to be a dragon to give birth to fire god.
Well, yeah, that's how you give birth to fire.
She chased him away, and their marriage never recovered.
Oh, I see. That's an also interesting version of that. maybe she died of loneliness after that.
Maybe, I don't know.
Point is, she does die at some point. And he decides to kill this fire god. And how potent this god was, that every member of his body that he removes when it hits the ground becomes another god. Like, there are just more gods that are spawned out of this.
The father of the fire god?
As Izanagi is killing the fire god, every piece that he hacks off of him becomes a new god. And so there are these different aspects of fire that become their own minor deities. Derivatives from the corpse of the fire god.
Interesting.
But so now Izanami is dead and he's alone and he's very sad. And so he's like, well, I'm going to go to hell, Hades, whatever you want to call it. I'm going to go to the underworld and I'm going to go get my wife. So he goes down there. There's a very specific mountain pass you travel down that takes you into the underworld. Dope. He knows where it is because he's, you know, he's the august male. He knows.
He knows everything.
That's right. So he goes down. It's very dark down there, so he has to get himself a light. I don't know if this is one of the moments where he breaks a tooth off of his comb, but his comb is a very useful magical item. He can just break the teeth off of it, and it becomes things.
It sounds very familiar to a Greek story that I've heard. Anyways, continue.
So that may have been what he did. He breaks a tooth off the comb, becomes a torch. He's finding his way, because the underworld is dark. It's the darkest place.
It is in the earth.
He finally finds her, and she's like, oh my gosh, don't look. And he learned his lesson. All right, last time he looked, bad things happened. So he turns around and goes, oh, I'm not going to look. And he's like, oh, I want you to come with me. Come back. We still have, like, our children need you. We still need to have more children. Like, let's go. And she was like, oh, if only you'd gotten here a little sooner.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So does he consider all the derivatives of the fire god to be his children or his grandchildren? Or does he even acknowledge them as, like, coming from him?
It never explicitly says.
Okay.
But he's recognized as, like, the king and father of all.
Fair enough.
He probably does.
The Japanese all-father. Valid. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sure. Sure.
So she's like, man, if only you'd been just a little bit sooner. I already ate food down here.
Oh no.
Right. So she's taken in the essence of the underworld. It's very similar to Hades feeding Persephone, the pomegranate seeds, right? Like, once you eat the food of the underworld, you're stuck. And so she's like, so I have to go, like, figure out how to get out of here. Don't come looking for me. I'll come back. And he's like, yeah, okay. He waits for a little while. But we know Izanagi's impatient. He likes to look.
Sure.
So eventually he goes, I can't wait anymore. He goes off and finds her and looks, and she's half rotted away.
Oh no.
Because she's been dead. So her skin is sloughing off. She's got maggots crawling around under her skin, out of holes in her body.
She is in hell.
Right. Well, she's dead. She's a corpse.
Yeah. She's not made it back yet.
And he gets terrified. Fair. And starts to run away. Now, she's pissed because this is the second time he's fucking done this.
Dude!
And she's embarrassed again.
Very big deal in Japanese culture.
And she can't even die this time to get away from it.
No,
she's already dead.
She's already died.
So she sends demons after him to catch him and bring him back.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's breaking teeth off his comb and turn them into traps to keep the demons from getting him. At one point, he's running with his sword just flailing behind him to keep them away from him. Eventually, Izanami says, fuck it, I'm going to do it myself, comes after him herself, chases him all the way back to the gate of the underworld, where he drops this massive rock in place to block it up.
Stopped up the underworld.
And they say their goodbyes from either side of the rock. And he basically is apologizing. He's like, I'm so sorry, I shouldn't have looked. But with the way you are now,
don't listen.
He's like, you can't come back. Like, you're you're fully dead.
Yeah.
It just can't happen. And she's just cursing him from the other side, saying, this is your fault. None of this would have happened without you. If you'd have just done what the fuck I said, everything would be okay. Now, the heartbreaking part is that they do both still love each other.
Yeah.
So this is very sad.
Yeah.
It's this emotional part.
Regardless, it would be sad. Like, if she fell out of love with him because of this, that would be sad.
So now he's back in the living world, the higher plane, and he has to purify himself because he's just been in the underworld.
Indeed. And you cannot go into Shinto shrines when you are covered in impure things.
That's right. And also he's grieving. So part of the purification process is to help him handle his emotions, to deal with this very complicated thing that has just happened. And so he starts walking down to the river and he's stripping off clothing and like, as if to really drive home the potency of this guy's divinity, every object of clothing that comes off
turns into a god.
Becomes a god. Every patch of ground that he touches becomes deific. The river that he bathes in becomes like seven different gods, because there's the high water, the middle water, and the low water as it's rushing past him. But then there's also the upstream god, the midstream god, and the downstream god. So,
and then just like the avatar of all rivers.
Yeah. And then like the filth that comes off him becomes demons. Like there's just everything that's ever come into contact with this guy.
It's a good thing he didn't take that into the shrine.
That's right. Becomes this sort of supernatural force. But he's crying.
Yeah. Because he lost his wife.
Yeah. And so there's the water that comes from his eyes. Now, it's not necessarily clear whether or not it's water that has washed his eyes, because he is ritually bathing.
Or if it's his tears.
Or if it's the tears.
They're always unclear about that.
Yeah. But the tear from one eye, I can't remember if it's right or left, and that might be significant, but it's not for the sake of telling the story. The tear from one eye becomes Amaterasu, the goddess of the sun.
Okay.
And so Japan sort of breaks from the traditional mold here. They have a solar female deity, a solar goddess. Most places will have a solar god and a lunar goddess. Japan, they have Amaterasu, the goddess of the sun, and Tsukuyomi, the god of the moon. And so they sort of reverse it.
Yeah, that doesn't happen a ton. And I've been in Hinduism.
Yes.
We had a male god of the moon. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's an Eastern thing.
It could be. It's certainly more prevalent in the East. I can't think of an example of Western culture, but maybe there's some, you know, lesser known Celtic deity.
Perhaps.
Anyway, the general trend is that the solar gods are male.
Yeah.
But that is not the case here. And so the tear from the other eye becomes Tsukuyomi, the moon god. And then from his nose comes
Susanoo.
Yeah.
Okay.
God of storms and the sea.
Trickster too, right?
Yes. Rambunctious, he's got a bit chaotic. Of an attitude. Well, think of a storm. A storm is not a calm, soothing event.
Certainly not.
Rainfall can be, but a storm is not. A storm is destructive and malevolent, but necessary. And sometimes ultimately good, because it does bring rain.
It does bring rain. That so is true. It does massively refill the water table.
Yeah. So with these three born, he really kind of considered his part in creation like done. Like, he doesn't make anything out. He gives Amaterasu dominion over the daytime, the sun, and the plains of heaven. He gives Tsukuyomi domain over nighttime and the moon. And he gives Susanoo the domain of the sea and storms.
Right.
And so he sort of kind of, he takes a backseat for the rest of the stories here. The real main character at this point is going to be Susanoo.
Yeah, he gets up to some shenanigans.
Because, I mean, really the main character of Japanese mythology, or Shinto mythology, if I had to pick one, would be Amaterasu. But a story happens where the exciting things are, and Amaterasu
isn't it exciting?
Not all that exciting, yeah. Except in how she deals with Susanoo.
That is an amusing part of the story.
Yeah. And so Susanoo after some time has passed, goes to Izanagi and says, like, hey, I'm not feeling all that fulfilled. I think I want to go stay with Mom. Who's the zombie queen of the underworld. And he's like, fine, you are banished from heaven.
Shit.
And Susanoo's like, well, not what I was hoping for, but end results the same, I guess. But decides he's going to go say goodbye to his siblings. So he goes to approach Amaterasu's palace. Amaterasu reads this as aggression.
He is the god of storms.
She's just like, there's no way he could be coming here for anything except some nefarious deed.
So she meets
him at the river border of her lands and says, like, that's enough. Whatever you're coming here for, I don't want your nonsense. I don't need your bullshit.
Just here to say goodbye. Jeez.
And so he says, like, no, don't worry about it, sister. I'm here in peace. I just came to say goodbye. I'm going to miss you, whatever. And so for some reason, there's a trading of gifts. And when he gets these jewels, he'll bite them. And it's funny, the words that they actually use is that he crunches them crunchingly.
Susanoo does this?
Yeah. And for some reason, they become like goddess princesses.
Cute.
Not really sure why, but we like that. But he and Amaterasu, when she gets her gifts, they become gods. Well, god princes. Mm-hmm. But I think she makes 4 and he makes 5. And so he says something to the effect where he's like, well, I made more and they're girls, therefore I win.
I remember that, yeah. Which
there was no competition.
No.
But he's one. He's that overly competitive guy. It's like, I know it's not a competition, but if it were, I'd totally kick your ass.
If dudes could have kids, could make children themselves, you know that's how they'd behave.
Dudes behave that way already. Nah. My kid is smarter than yours. Take that.
Just, I love that stance. You know what? I made more kids, and they were all girls. Girls are better. I win.
He says
to the woman.
Right. Who only had boys. So now he's decided, I'm not going anywhere because I'm the winner.
I'm the best.
So
clearly.
He just starts wreaking havoc in heaven, in Amaterasu's domain. Like, he goes and fucks up all of the tilling fields, so, like, they can't farm. He's scaring cattle.
He does this as a parting gift before going to hell.
Yeah. Well, he's gonna go to hell.
He's gonna go to hell.
Because that's what Amaterasu's thinking right now. He's like, go to hell. And she's going around, like, making all these excuses and apologies for him.
Interesting.
You know, being a good big sister.
You know, he won.
He did win.
It wasn't a contest, but he won.
But he definitely won, yeah, for sure. But it stops when he backwards flays a horse.
Backwards flays?
Yeah.
Like, so starts from the hind end or something?
Well, so the flay would be you cut the stomach and then open it up like a book.
Oh, sure.
So he cut the spine.
What the fuck, dude?
And opened it up the other way.
Inefficient and cruel to the animal.
Backward flays the horse, throws it through the ceiling of one of Amaterasu's temples to scare her seamstresses that make all these clothings for her and other goddesses.
That's outrageous.
And scares them so bad, some of them die.
Yeah!
Some of them are also crushed by the corpse of the horse.
Does anyone remember The Godfather? You probably didn't watch The Godfather, but you definitely saw the scene where the horse's head was in the bed.
That's right.
All right? That shit's terrifying.
It's very scary. First of all, how'd they get in there so quietly?
Right?
It's very scary. You absolutely could have just been murdered. So anyway, that's her line in the sand. That's where she's like, fuck this, no more, I'm done.
That would be my line, too.
You killed my weavers, and I'm not having it. So he's finally actually kicked out of heaven. Now, because of this, Amaterasu goes into this depression. And she's like, I am retiring from the world.
The sun decides
I'm
not
done.
To shine
so
anymore.
So she finds a holy cave, goes inside, throws a rock in front of it, and says, I'm never coming out. Now, the sun has just disappeared.
So I think I remember what happens next. Or at least their solution to this problem.
Yeah.
I don't remember what happens before the solution to the problem.
So the whole world just goes to shit.
They're bathed in darkness.
The plants die.
Yeah.
Waters dry. Like, everything's dead and dying, and it's awful. And all the other gods and goddesses are like, well, this obviously sucks. So we have to find a way to get Amaterasu out of the cave.
Yeah.
So they come up with a plan. They light a big bonfire.
Yeah.
And they get all the gods together, and they just have a fucking rager. of a party.
Leading the rager, if I remember correctly, is the goddess of dancing.
That's right.
And she's, you know, hot. Yes. And everybody's hooting and hollering about
super
it.
Super good looking. Yeah. Now, there's also gods there just making fools of themselves, sure. like getting everybody to laugh. It's just, it's a raucous bacchanal. It's good stuff. And Amaterasu, this is all right outside Amaterasu's cave.
Indeed.
And so she's hearing all this, and she's thinking to herself, like, I thought everything was going to be awful and everyone was going to miss me when I was gone. It turns out they're all having such a great time. So she calls out from the cave, what's going on out there? Why is everybody so fucking happy? Which, to be I'd be a little bitter too, all right? If everything was eh when I left, and then as soon as I'm gone, it's the best, I'd be like, wow, fuck me, I guess. You know, like, I'd be a little upset.
Through a party without me?
Right. Through a party because I'm gone? Wow.
Jerks.
Bunch of bullies. So she calls out, what's so great out there? And they're like, oh my God, there's this beautiful goddess out here. She's the most amazing, radiant thing we've ever seen, and it's so great. You should come out and see her. Now her curiosity's piqued. So she rolls back the stone, and as she does it, they place a mirror in front of her.
Yeah.
And so she sees the most beautiful, radiant goddess she's ever seen, and it's herself.
Yeah.
So she's drawn out of the cave, mesmerized by her own reflection. She's like, oh my God, what is this?
Who's that?
Now, as she comes out, they put a rope in front of the cave, and they're like, now you can't go any further back than this. And so they keep egging her out farther and farther. Till eventually she comes back and she realizes, oh, they were just trying to lure her out. She's the real guest of the party. The party continues with her, and she has a great time, and now she's back out of the cave. Now, in the meantime, Susanoo vanished. He's gone. So he's down on the mortal plane now. He's out in the wilds of Japan.
Yeah.
Comes to a river to get some water.
Yeah.
And sees a pair of chopsticks floating down the river. And he goes, oh, well, upstream there obviously must be people. We're going to go there. So he goes upstream and he finds this old couple with a young woman crying.
Shit.
He's like, what's going on here? And they go, oh my gosh, who are you? And he goes, hi, Susanoo, obviously god of storms and the sea. Duh.
Duh.
And they're like, oh my God. And these are two lesser gods here. And they're like, oh, thank God we found you. We're actually having a terrible time. And he's like, what's wrong? He's like, well, we used to have seven more daughters. This is our last daughter. And he's like, what happened to the other seven? Well, there's this eight-headed dragon that keeps showing up and demanding our daughters as sacrifice. And we can't say no.
Oh, shit.
And he's supposed to come back in like a couple of days.
Susanoo's
like, all right. So that's your daughter, right? And they're like, yeah. And he goes, cool. If I take care of your dragon issue, can I have her as a wife?
And they're like, yes!
Absolutely. Why wouldn't I want my daughter married to the god of storms?
Like, you're like fucking so famous.
Yeah, I mean, you're easily number three out of top three gods in Japan. Like, yeah. You can have her daughter in marriage. And of course, she's like, yeah, I want to be married to the god of storms. Never have to want for anything in my life. And I'll probably get to be immortal.
I mean,
it sounds like it's all plus.
It does.
And I'm going to imagine he's handsome. I don't know if he actually is, but I assume he's a god.
I mean,
he's
probably a good looking fella. I mean, well, then not all gods are handsome.
That's true.
You know, some gods are cursed with ugliness because they have everything else.
That's true. I don't know. I imagine god of storm to me seems like a sort of rugged, muscular, handsome guy.
Like an Aquaman type.
Yeah. Like Jason Momoa.
Yeah, Jason absolutely. Momoa. Like a Jason Momoa type.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they agree. And he goes, all right, I need you to do me something. I need you to distill me some liquor. And I'm going to need 8 big jars of it. And then he goes and builds 8 gates.
8 gates.
And he puts all these jars of liquor in between all these 8 gates. So when this dragon arrives, he has to go through a gate. And when he goes through one gate, he sees 8 jars of liquor. And each head takes one, and they drink it. And they go to the next gate, and there's 8 more jars of liquor. So every gate he goes through, there's 8 more jars of booze. By the time he gets to the end, he's so, you know, drunk, he just falls asleep. And Susanoo just kills him in his sleep.
How much liquor did he pump this dragon with?
A lot. This thing was big, okay? It's got 8 heads, 8 tails, 1 body, but that body stretches across 8 mountain peaks and 8 valleys.
Man, the bladder on that thing.
It's big. So, passed out drunk, he slays it. He's kept his would-be wife close to him. He turned her into a comb, put it in his hair for safekeeping.
That's cute.
That way she wouldn't get injured. Slays the dragon, turns her back, takes the heads of the dragon to the couple, and is like, look, I slayed the dragon. Now, when he killed the dragon, he broke his sword on something.
Interesting.
In the dragon's body.
Okay.
So he rips whatever the thing is out, and he finds a magical holy sword.
Cool.
From the body of the dragon. Now, most people, you keep that sword.
Most That's people, sword. I mean, Balin sure
If
did.
You're Balin, you keep that sword. he does not. He's now a married man.
He doesn't need
a sword.
He
slayed a dragon.
What do I need a sword for?
He's matured. So he goes to heaven, where he is not welcome.
Right.
And presents the sword to Amaterasu as an apology.
Saz, want a sword?
Which she gratefully accepts, forgives him, but he chooses to leave heaven anyway to live in Japan with his wife.
At least he doesn't go to hell.
And builds a castle surrounded by clouds, and he and his wife live there forever.
Nice, nice.
The only other story I have, which is a very funny story, is that the goddess of harvests was going to throw a feast. And invites...
Oh, I remember this one.
And invites all of the gods to go. Now, Tsukuyomi shows up because he's invited. And everyone's partying, whatever. And the goddess of harvests is like, I gotta go in the back and get the food ready. I'll be right back.
Don't come in.
She goes up. Tsukuyomi sneaks a little peek. He's like, I'm gonna go find out what we're having for dinner.
Oh,
it's gonna be great.
He sees the worst thing possible.
And he sees the goddess of harvest making food.
Yeah.
Now, the way the goddess of harvest makes food is it comes out of her body.
It comes out of all
So
of
he
the,
watches her pull food out of her ears, out of her mouth, out of her nose, out of her armpits. He sees her pull food out of her vagina.
Yeah, probably her butt, too.
Out of her anus.
Mm-hmm.
Out of every
orifice.
Feasible nook and cranny.
And probably cried some stuff, too.
And he is disgusted.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair.
And he thinks, this is going to be served to my sister, sun goddess and queen of heaven. No fucking way. That is shit food, literally. So he kills her. Chops her up into a bunch of tiny little pieces.
Yeah.
And that's where all the fruits and vegetables that grow native on Japan come from. Now, this is a great dishonor to Amaterasu.
Well,
because
yeah.
her brother has killed the host of the party. Now, she didn't see all the nasty things, apparently. Nor did she care. She said, it doesn't matter. You've dishonored me. You've shamed me
the
in
chef.
Front of all
you,
of heaven.
You killed the chef.
So he is banished from her presence.
Rightfully
which is why
so.
You don't see the sun and the moon at the same time.
Cool. Makes sense. Now, symbolically speaking, I think it's a little amusing that he killed this woman for being unclean, for being mm-hmm. impure, because all food is unclean and impure.
Well, I think that was the message.
Yeah.
I think it's metaphorically tying to the idea that procuring food is a dirty business.
It is.
If you want to fertilize, you have to use manure.
Yep.
If you want to build up your soil profile, you have to use compost.
Yep.
There's nasty things that go into making the food that you eat. Now, there's also the idea that food isn't free. It comes at some cost.
It does.
You have to work for it. And something has to die for it. If you're going to eat meat, you have to kill the animal.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, best case scenario, I guess severely maim it. You know, if you chop a leg off a cow, I guess the cow doesn't
yeah.
have to die. You
I mean,
can save it. But why the fuck would
you
do that? You
know, scientists are really working on that lab-grown meat, and they just still haven't got
you
it
just,
quite right.
Ugh. I'm not a fan of the lab-grown meat idea. I'll take the cow.
I'm into it if they can figure out how to do it, but it seems to me what they're discovering is the way to do it is to have a whole proper body. So there really isn't a scientific way to do that.
Now you're just cloning cows. You're just killing clones.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think that's what it's getting at is this concept of sacrifice for continuance. In order for you to feed yourself and continue,
something else must be sacrificed for it. So that's the goddess of harvest, is the sacrifice, so that the rest of us can reap that harvest.
Well, practically speaking, I know in the world that there's a lot of people that I think would prefer agriculture over that.
Yeah.
I don't know where I fall on that.
Well, and then you get into how many plants are alive.
How?
And they can feel pain.
They are, yeah, true.
They communicate pain to other plants.
The smell you get when you smell freshly cut grass, that is the smell of plants screaming.
That is the hormonal signal that they send to other plants to warn them of danger.
Yeah.
So they're literally warning other plants that you're coming.
Yeah.
So
doesn't do any good. I still mow them down.
Right. Well, but that's kind of my point, is the argument for not eating meat is like, oh, well, this living thing suffers. It's like, well, yeah, but the plants are going to suffer when you pick them too.
It's true. I mean, maybe the trees that bear fruit, it's not so bad for them. You know.
True. Now you're just devouring their offspring.
Right.
That's like eggs. That's not so bad. there's some loose vegetarians that'll be like, eh, I'll take an egg. That doesn't quite count.
My father, he wouldn't eat pork or beef, but cheese, eggs, fish.
Well, the fish have sinned. That's a fact. Fish are evil, and you can absolutely eat them.
Also the healthiest of meats.
Yes. That's just a joke we have as Catholics, because during Lent especially, but really all year round, on Fridays, you're supposed to abstain from meat.
Absolutely.
But fish doesn't count. You can have fish.
Yeah.
And so the argument is, well, how come fish counts when that's meat? It's like, well, the fish have sinned.
The fish have sinned.
That's why it counts. The cows haven't sinned. The pigs didn't sin. But the fish, they sinned.
I like to ask Catholics what they're abstaining from during that time. I never asked you. What did you abstain from this year?
I abstained from a lot.
A lot?
Yeah. It's more than one thing.
One girl I knew abstained from tea. Mm-hmm. One of the principals abstained from chocolate.
Yeah. So it's common practice for those of you that might not know Christian tradition, but specifically Catholic, really hard on about it, is during Lent, which is the 40 days preceding Easter, you're supposed to give something up, something that you enjoy, something that you like. It's a sort of spiritual penance that you pay to, in a way, pay homage to the suffering of Jesus on the cross in preparation for his passion and then resurrection. Now, what I did is a program called Exodus 90,
okay,
which starts 90 days before Easter. So it's twice as long. So it starts mid-January.
It sounds like some extra shit.
Yeah. And you give up almost everything.
Oh.
So days of fasting and abstinence on Wednesdays and Fridays, which means abstaining from meat. And you fast in that you can have one meal that is the size of a regular meal that you would have, and then two smaller meals that together cannot equate to a single meal. So you basically get two snacks and one meal.
Okay.
And you can't have meat in any of that.
Okay.
Do that every Wednesday and Friday. I did not play any video games. I didn't drink any alcohol. I didn't drink anything with sugar in it.
That's hard.
I basically had water,
and unsweet tea
and black coffee. That was it. That's what I could drink.
The sugar's in everything.
I made myself drink some milk just because, for health reasons, but no sweets of any kind.
The whole time?
Yeah. Unnecessary mobile and computer device use, gone. Unless I needed to do it for like work or like text you back about the podcast, I didn't do it. Those are the big ones. But the one that I usually, when I tell people, I'm like, hey, you should try this, and that gets them to say no, is no hot showers.
Shit, man.
Cold, short showers.
Ugh. That,
because some of the other stuff, like some people already do, it's like exercise at least 3 times a week.
Sure.
A lot of people already do that. Another one that tends to get people is dedicated 1 hour of prayer time every day. That's hard to do.
Yeah, I mean, even if, like, from a more Buddhist or Eastern standpoint, you just looked at that as, like, an hour of meditation.
Hour of meditation?
That's still even hard to do.
Even if you find the time, which is one of the harder parts. Finding the time is tough. When you're busy, you're married, you got a family, it's indeed hard to find an hour. But
apologies for the buzzsaw.
But to focus on that for a whole hour, even if you got the time, is tough.
Some dedication.
It's fucking
you
hard.
Did that since January?
I believe it was January 16th this year to Easter Day.
You didn't mention now, it once.
No. Now, you get to take a break from one rule every Sunday. So the celebration of the Lord's Day is you get to pick one rule and you get to break it once.
What was it for you?
Usually, I took a hot shower.
Yeah.
That was usually what I did. Sometimes, I would forego that and I would have a beer. Or sometimes, like, there's a niece's or a nephew's birthday party and I'm like, all right, I'll have a cupcake. Or I'll have a piece of cake, or I'll have a scoop of ice cream, something like that.
I believe
that.
On Kara's birthday, which was on a Sunday, mm-hmm. you allowed yourself one of her birthday cupcakes.
That is correct. I had a birthday cupcake.
Wow. Yeah. All right. All right.
But no, I don't talk about it a whole lot unless somebody asked me about it.
I did ask.
But that's there's a passage in the gospel where Jesus talks about the Jewish priests that would like stand on street corners and pray. Or whenever they would fast, they'd let their beard grow out and they'd look all disheveled and tired. And he's like, those guys are doing it for the public clout.
Well, I'm
don't do that.
Well, I'm glad I asked and I commend you for doing it. And it's I hard. Commend you for not saying anything until you were asked.
Yeah, that's honestly, it's not as hard as it seems. Because most people, if you don't pretend like something's wrong, most people don't give a shit. They won't ask.
That's true.
They don't care.
I mean, it's true.
It's only when you're like, oh. Which is, I'm not trying to disparage people, that if you see someone that looks like they're struggling and you ask, that's good. You should do that. But
you weren't struggling from outside appearances.
No. I mean, there were times where I was hungry and I was a little cranky, but it's not a big deal. But that was sort of the point of that. The gospel message was, he's like, you don't act like the things you're choosing to do are so damn hard.
It's true.
When you're choosing to do them.
It's true.
Because if you're just doing them so that people notice how good a person you are, you're not doing them for the right reason.
Let's tie this back into Japanese mythology. How does that relate, do you think?
Well, the Japanese culture in general is actually a very polite culture. That's like the one thing that every Westerner that's ever visited Japan will come back with. It's like, oh my God, they're so polite. And they have this concept of like shared suffering. If they see you going through something, they won't just ask you, how are you and are you okay? They will do their best to join you in it.
That's a very Jewish mentality, too, especially when, like, you lose someone. I remember when I do you remember that movie? It was called The Pickle something. It had Seth Rogen in it. Well, I can't remember the title of it, but it's on HBO Max. It's really good. Seth Rogen has an ancestor who's a Jew who came to this country and he worked in a pickle brining factory and he fell into a vat of pickle brine that preserved him for a century.
Oh man.
Somehow.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they're tearing this place down, they break him free, not knowing he's in there. And he's like, oh my God. And so then he winds up in this, laboratory in New York and they do a bunch of tests on him. And then they cleverly don't explain how this was even possible.
Yeah.
Right. Like, it was basically like there was a news, they got all the media together and then the scientists explained how I survived. Mm. And then all the newscasters were like, oh. So they find through genetic testing his one remaining descendant, which is another person character played by Seth Rogen.
Mm-hmm.
So he plays both of these characters, the modern version and the old version. Yeah. And when the old version discovers that his descendant has lost both of his parents, he's like, tell me about them. Let us suffer together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's like, come, let's go to their grave. And he's like, oh, I don't know, man. I don't really, it's not something
really
I
unbury all that stuff.
I'm not, I'm good.
Yeah.
I don't really do that.
Yeah.
I don't practice. I'm not an Orthodox Jew.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
It's got to be disappointing for a great-great-grandfather to be like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, most people can already relate to that with their parents. They go to college, they stop going to church, they go home. Do you still go to church?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Totally. Yep.
Yeah, that's sure
something
do.
That I do.
Yeah. But so, like, I mean, there's like common examples of if it's a hot, sunny day outside and you stop a Japanese person to talk to them and they're wearing a hat, they'll take their hat off.
Yeah.
Because you don't have one. And so they're like, well, we're going to share in this moment. We're both going to be a little bit miserable, but that's going to make us understand each other a little better. And yeah. So there's a level of that. And I think that ties to one of the biggest differences between the Japanese mythology and the other kinds of mythology that we've already talked about, which in Eastern, at least with Hinduism, Buddhism, and Chinese, is that like in Hinduism and Buddhism, there's this, in Eastern philosophy in general, there's this sort of naturalism to it. But in India, in Hindu and Buddhist, there's this idea of like detachment from, you know, like there's the natural world. And we're going to detach ourselves from it.
A little bit.
Yeah, we're going to become enlightened, and then we're going to leave it. We're going to escape it. We're away from it. You know, the Hindu aesthetics, they deprived themselves of food and water, and, I mean, they emaciated themselves. Yeah, well, but they would fast a lot.
Oh, you mean the Hindus?
Yeah. And then the Buddhists, they're like, yeah, that, but not quite as much, because even fasting in excess, that's attachment to the suffering. Of
the destructive nature in you.
Right. Yeah. And they're like, well, no, that's still of the world. So we need to distance ourselves from that. So they take the middle way, which is avoiding any attachment one way or the other to existence. And then in Chinese, it's more the natural world to be organized, to be administrated to, like we keep saying, like it's this big administration project.
Some of that carries over to Japan. They have a Bureau of Magic.
Yes.
A little bit of what you do ties into that. We discussed that the first time we recorded this about botanical gardens,
mm-hmm.
I believe.
Yeah.
Zen gardens.
Yes. Yeah. Traditional Japanese style landscape design. Very much ties into their ideas of magic.
You mentioned that there was like an intricate rule book to make a Zen garden.
I have a book that explains all the rules. It's got diagrams. And what I found interesting is that a lot of the rules actually match, as far as we can tell, like scientific principles that we use now in landscape design. Off the top of my head, I haven't read the book in a while. The northwest corner of a property is what they call the demon gate.
Cool.
That's where bad stuff comes in.
Bad stuff comes out of the northwest.
The northwest corner of the property. So the common practice is that you place large guardians at the northwest corner because they'll keep the demons off. Now, the large guardian could be a big stone structure. It could be large evergreen trees. They can't be deciduous because then in the winter you're left vulnerable.
Do you know what I think is funny?
What?
Because I was thinking about which corner of my backyard is the northwest corner.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure that is the corner my dogs bark at the most. Like, genuinely.
The demon gate. They're coming for that card, bro. They want that card. They go, it's not ironic to us. Give me that. That's real.
You leave my satanic card-carrying membership card alone.
But so that's the thing, is you put large evergreens or a large piece of stone artwork or architecture there because that's permanent and it'll keep the demons out.
Yeah.
Now, the prevailing winds in most of the island of Japan come from the northwest.
Yeah.
Which means they're the coldest in the winter. So common practice today would be that on the northwest corner of your property, in the United States, it's more straight west, but still northwest would be the colder of the two. You would want some large feature that will take a lot of the force out of the prevailing wind, because that will keep your property warmer in the colder winter months.
And there's also like a way to cultivate your trees, I believe.
Yeah. So that's one thing. And it's like, well, I mean, they figured that out thousands of years ago in Japan. They're like, we've got to plant something there. They just explained it as evil things come out of there. Evil being the fucking cold in the middle of winter that kills people.
Indeed.
So let's block that with something that's going to be there permanently that will defend us from that evil. So a lot of what at least in terms of landscape design, they're like, this is the occult practice of Shinto Japan. It's like, well, that's actually very scientifically founded. That stuff makes sense.
It's interesting how some of these practices have scientific backing, but they're never explained in a scientific way at all.
No.
Well, I mean, it couldn't be, could it?
Yeah.
Back then.
No, they would. They didn't have the
science,
the process even, or the language to even do so.
I think the earliest version of a scientific method was in the Renaissance.
Yeah. But so that even ties back into what I was saying is the difference is that the Japanese cultural response to nature and the mysteries of it was not detachment like the Indian response. It wasn't subjugation and organization, which was the Chinese response, but it was just amazement. They just were in wonder and awe of everything around them. It was like, yes, this world is mysterious and crazy.
And beautiful.
And how cool is it that I get to bear witness to it?
That's a pretty good outlook. There was something I remembered while you were discussing this, because I'm guessing we discussed it right around the time we discussed this topic.
Yeah.
There's a creature that, so I forget what it's called. I hope you remember the name of it.
I probably don't.
Well, so it's a reptile creature, and it has, like, the top of its head is
a bowl of water.
A bowl of water.
Yeah, kappa.
A kappa, thank you. Yeah, kappas. So kappas, they're these lizard creatures that are, like, maybe 2-3 feet tall, and they're humanoid, and the top of their head, it's kind of, is it concave when it's about
it's concave, yeah.
It has, like, a concave dome. And in that dome is a little pool of water.
Pool of water, yeah.
And, you know, there's little creatures living in it and all that. This thing is nothing to be trifled with. It will crawl up your butt and eat your intestines.
That it will. It's like a vulture.
There's only one way to keep this thing from crawling up your butt and eating your intestines, and that is to bow to it.
Yeah, never face away from a kappa. The minute you show it your anus, you're done.
Yes. So what you want to do, you see a kappa, you bow. Because for whatever reason, they're real polite when it comes to bowing. They'll bow back.
They have to bow.
And when they bow back, that pool of water will fall out of the top of their head. And then they'll get disoriented and confused. And that's your chance to run away.
Mm-hmm. They get embarrassed and they get confused. And then you split and then they can't chase you. That's how you get away from the kappa.
Which...
I believe there's also some kind of monster that has a butthole for a face.
I don't remember reading about that one.
I think that's a thing. Maybe it doesn't have a face and it like scares you by showing you its butt. I'm not sure. But there's some weird butt monster in Japan.
In Japan,
yeah.
Huh.
I don't know what that's about.
Okay. There's also lots of cool dragons.
There's lots of cool dragons. Oh, tying back to the Buddhist story of the hair mark on the moon.
Yeah.
In Hokkaido, they make snow bunnies during winter instead of snowmen.
I like that. That's cute.
They make little rabbits. And then they have there's a plant that's native to the area called Nandina. Mm-hmm. We can plant it here. It's not a very winter hardy, but in a good spot you can have it. It's called Heavenly Bamboo.
Mm.
The cultivars we plant, they're pretty short. I don't know wild how well it grows, but... It's got little red berries on it in the winter. And so what they'll do is they'll chop off some sprigs of it. They use that as the bunny's ears. And they use the little berries as its eyes.
I like that.
So it's a cute little red-eyed snow bunny.
Japan also has one of the archipelago islands. It's just an island of bunnies.
Yeah. So I think the legend in Japan about the hair on the moon, though, is that there's one of the other little crater spots. It's like a mortar and pestle.
Mm.
And it's up there making mochi.
I love mochi.
So it's tied to the New Year because mochi is a big treat in New Year's
mochi
in Japan.
Is a lovely treat.
And so the little rabbit in the moon just makes a lot of mochi.
I get it. I get the mochi ice cream from Aldi's.
I haven't tried that yet.
You should. They have a few different versions. They've got chocolate, mint chocolate. I think also like a fruity ice cream version of it.
Yeah.
It's powdered. It's lovely. Yeah.
I have to try that.
Anything else about Japanese mythology before we wrap up?
That's all I got.
Okay.
That's all I got. Okay. I find it interesting that the sun god is female. Yeah. Actually, I guess I do have something else on that. Just because generally the reasoning behind, this is speculative, obviously, no religion has ever really spelled this out so directly.
You're left to speculate.
Yeah, is that the lunar is feminine because it waxes and wanes,
right.
And that's normally associated with the menstrual cycle.
Yeah.
That makes sense. And the solar is associated with masculine because it never changes.
And then
there's no flux. It's all the sun is just the sun. It's always the sun, and it comes every day. Now,
with Hinduism, it was the man, and it was still attached to a lunar cycle. It was his sexual potency.
Yeah.
At his zenith with the woman he wanted to be with, he would be erect.
Yes.
And then with the woman he wanted to be with, he was flaccid. Mm-hmm. And then when he was at his zenith, when he was farthest away, because he had like 30, 31 wives.
Yeah.
When he was farthest away from the one he wanted to truly be with,
yeah,
he would be at his most erect.
Yeah.
So
that was a punishment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, what I find interesting in the difference is that the Japanese have conceptualized it the opposite. And I think that does make some sense. Because there is only one presence that, speaking generally, must be present for life to exist, and that is the feminine.
Yeah.
Like, no matter what kind of involvement you've had with women your entire life, you had a mother.
Yeah.
That's why you exist.
It's true.
A woman was there at the moment you were born. So if there's one permanent
fixture
presence
yeah.
in human existence, it is feminine, because you have to have a woman.
Yeah.
The man doesn't have to be there for the pregnancy. The man doesn't have to be there for the birth. The man can be absent after insemination.
It's true.
And life still exists.
It's true.
So that's, I think, more what that's getting at is the sort of enduring nature of the feminine in human existence. So I see why the flip can make sense. Now, as to why the male essence waxes and wanes, we all die. Male or female, we all die. So that's more just like the human nature in and of itself, is that you're going to be born. That's the new moon. Was that outside?
That was outside.
Wow.
That was some...
I know a good muffler shop that guy should head to.
I had a friend who would refer to vehicles like that as hummingbirds.
So. Well, there you go, audience. You got to hear some hummingbirds. Our local Missouri hummingbirds.
Freaking dickheads. I hate cars. That's a fun fact about me. Hate cars. Give me trains. Give me buses.
Motorcycle.
Give me an e-bike.
Everybody on a motorcycle. I don't think they've come up with a good electric bike yet.
They've got actually quite a few. I've not tried
like
one.
Motorcycle or
no e-bike.
Oh,
I don't
okay,
know about
okay.
an electronic motorcycle.
No, that's what I was talking about.
Oh, I see.
Electronic motorcycle.
No,
there's
no
Tesla bike yet.
No, I want
Tesla
a
motorcycle.
Bicycle with a motored battery that can pedal assist when I go up hills.
Yeah.
That's it. That's
yeah.
all I want. I want to take that to be able to go to work, and I want dedicated bike lanes. I'm going to go on a whole tangent. I'm not going to. We're going to wrap up.
That's it. Hope you guys enjoyed Japanese mythology.
I hope
it's pretty fun.
I hope you enjoy having a child. I hope your
I will
wife
enjoy
enjoys having
a child.
It's
gonna be so good.
It's gonna be so fun for you guys.
I'm super stoked.
And next time I'm probably gonna be Kara. You Kara and I are gonna be doing a Princess Bride. Look forward to that.
And I'll see you guys when I see you.
Bye.
Bye.